their final moments. Episode 2. The streets are paved with bone. God's sake. Hey, Mike. It's about 2:30 in the AM. Been 2 or 3 days since I spoke to you last, depends how you count them. I've knocked back a couple of very sugary espressos, so there's no danger of me falling asleep again. Never really understood people who like sleeping, naps and things. They always seem wasteful to me. When it comes down to it, it's just choosing to do nothing for a period of time. My dreams aside, time spent sleeping is time I could spend doing something more fun or more practical. That said, I suppose I'm more aware than most that our time on Earth is finite. That may have something to do with it. Not that anything I dream about is likely to actually... The floor just disappeared. I'm on my chair and my chair is on. Nothing. That's fun. I should probably clarify that there is something underneath me. It's just a hole. And the bottom of the hole is below where my floor should be. Where my floor is. Still there. Still there. Yes. I'm gonna stop looking now. It's giving me vertigo. Well, here's hoping that doesn't stick around too long. Not hugely fond of the idea of walking on a floor I can't see. Actually, that's a lie. I like floor tanks in aquariums. It's almost the same sort of thing, right? That aquarium the other week, it had good otters. Not that there are bad otters. I never met an otter I didn't like. Anyway. Dream. I was in what I suppose must have been a town centre. Not one I recognise, but they're all more or less the same, right? It was nice, in a Truman Show kind of way, very orderly and uniform. I was stood in front of this massive off-white facade. I think it led into one of those shopping centres. Not the fun kind, the kind with about 3 open shops and several million shuttered places for hire. The ghost town of shopping centres, really. Ghost Mall? Ghost Mall! Yeah, never mind. I said, Truman Show earlier. I guess that's not quite right. The whole point of that is that it's all unsettlingly perfect and generic, right? That's not really what it was like. I think the least realistic element of that film isn't the overall premise. It's just the fact that anything in that town is, well, finished. Because of course nothing in real life is ever finished, is it, Mike? Someone realises too late that they can improve what they've made. By the time they finish improving it, someone else has broken a different thing elsewhere. While fixing that thing, someone number one realises that there's a better way to fix the first thing, and on and on and on. It's a little depressing, really. Completion is a pretty elusive thing in people too, of course. Every act of self-improvement lays an expectation for you to follow it with another. You start dieting, so you decide to get in shape. You start working out, which means you change the diet to match your workout. And all the while, you know that letting up on any of those things means that you've let yourself down. But I can't really talk on that, though. I tend to prevent any potential failure with my flawless strategy of surrendering before the battle starts. It's usually easier. What was I talking about? Oh, yeah, Truman Show. You'll have to forgive me, Mike. My attention span is currently fueled exclusively by caffeine. Now, from the steps of the shopping centre, there was a pretty good view of this perfectly symmetrical town. There was a massive belt of green running up the centre of the street, people striding up and down, sitting on benches that birds had used as toilets, and having picnics on grass that dogs had used instead. you know, usual small town stuff. About halfway along this glorified lawn was a massive stone fountain. I remember it because the spout of water was just slightly off kilter. Not so much that it was clearly intentional, but just enough that you could notice the angle, especially given how straight and ordered and boring everything else was. That was the first hint that it was a real place, you see. The second was the road on the left side of the grass. There was some kind of one-way system in place. You drive in on the right side, circle around the grass once you reach the ghost mall, and then drive out on the left. Yeah, I'm sticking with ghost mall. The problem with this was that someone had obviously decided the road on the left was not fit for purpose. A whole stretch of it was sectioned off, surrounded by luminous orange barriers. Great big eyesore, erected in the name of aesthetic perfection. I was a bloke this time, one of the people working to fix the road based on the high-vis jacket which matched the barriers. He had friends, this guy. Maybe not I'll bury a body for you friends, but he was well-liked. On our way from the ghost mall, we stopped to listen to a busker with a decent enough voice and a guitar that must have been pining for new strings. They exchanged smiles and a few words. I got the sense that he was known around the town, but that's not exactly an achievement in a place that small. I'm trying now to guess his age. I seem to remember he had big hands, not long and flexible like a piano player's, more like my granddad's. Could feel the work he'd done in their firmness, like all that time spent laying bricks had transfigured them to be brick-like themselves. Of course, if your bricks are shaking like that, it's probably time to move house. This guy had the same kind of hands, bulky and strong, but with none of the scars or wrinkles that you could see on granddad's. So, strong enough and old enough to have the hands of a blue-collar worker, but too young to regret it. Not important, of course. His hands were hands I made up. Hell, maybe they were my granddad's hands from some half-remembered photo of him. Before long, he was standing in front of the hole in the road, right behind the barrier. The work clearly wasn't too far along, and nobody appeared to be going about it particularly urgently. It was less an organised effort and more a mutually agreed-upon milling about. Like me, when I have assignments to do, essentially. But this guy, my guy, he was clearly resolved to move it along. He made a brief examination of the site and some frankly hazardous debris scattered at the bottom. Not that anyone knew that at the time. With a nod and a final gulp of the caramel-flavoured coffee in his hand, he clambered up into a newly emptied excavator. It won't come as any surprise to Sabrina that at this point I'd have been hyperventilating if they were my lungs. There is nothing about being seated in 10 tons of metal that should bring anyone any degree of comfort. Nothing about the scratching and screeching of the bucket against the ground or the creaking of the arm as it bends down. I expected the whole thing to collapse, and once I thought that might happen, I couldn't stop thinking it. But the person at the controls didn't seem to mind one bit. It's one of the worst things about it, of course. My mind, his brain, his lungs. It didn't get any easier, either. We were there for what felt like hours. Sometimes one of his mates would turn up and they'd chat a bit. Eventually, the others started drifting away to their lunch breaks and my guy wrapped up what he was doing. By this time, we'd uncovered a mess of pipes and metal bars, which, now that I think about it, I'm not sure what the overall goal actually might have been. As far as I know, we may have just been digging a hole in order to acquire a hole. I wasn't really thinking about that at the time. I was just relieved to finally be out of that enormous yellow death trap. The feeling didn't last. No sooner had we disembarked than they turned up, long coat gliding across the pavement like it was made of ice. I couldn't see them. Like, you try to look, and your vision would just sort of shunt away. It was a duffel coat, long, tattered, green, but I couldn't tell you the first thing about the person that was wearing it. It was just this overwhelming urge not to see them. The people they passed by clearly had the same reaction, some of them exerting obvious physical effort to look somewhere, anywhere else. My conductor was struggling the most. He remained glued to the spot, forcing the figure into his peripheral vision as they approached. I just know that if we had looked, something terrible would have happened. Something soul-destroying, something evil. It was the first time the two of us had been on the same page, and I could feel his heart hammering like it was mine, the sweat prickling his brow. They kept coming forward, the pace constant, that coat flowing like water, and we took a step back, desperate to find somewhere else to look, but unable to turn away. They demanded our full attention and none of it, and the result threw us both into a panic. Another step back, then another, and suddenly we were forced to look at the ground, their shoes coming into view. They were old, and I don't mean that they were antique or had a vintage design, I mean they were old, falling to pieces, the soles hanging on by a thread. They should have been slapping against the pavement with every step, except of course I couldn't hear them. I didn't want to hear them. Whoever or whatever this person was, there was nothing anyone could do to notice their presence. No. No, that's not quite right. They were like a secret. A secret that everybody knows must exist. A secret that obviously exists, but the details of which must never be made known. They, it, passed publicly unnoticed. It crossed the last few steps between us without a sound and stood a hair's breadth from my conductor. If it was breathing, I couldn't feel it. I could feel the lump in the bloke's throat, though, and the pain slowly developing in his neck, bent at a 90-degree angle to avert his eyes. For a long, agonizing moment, nothing happened. And then it started to bend its knees. Ever so gradually, it lowered itself, revealing more and more of its form. Frayed trousers stained 10 different colours began to inch into view, and we couldn't close our eyes, couldn't turn away. I started screaming inside my mind, "Don't look, don't see it, don't let it show you its face. The secret is not for you, not for anyone. Don't look." Hell, maybe he heard me. Or maybe his panic just got the better of him. Whatever the reason, the conductor launched himself backwards into the pit, arms rising to cover his eyes to hide this impossible thing from view. We landed without a sound. The wind was knocked out of him. Pain raced through his spine. He tried to call for help, but all that escaped was a wet gurgle, and I felt the blood run down his neck and start to pool beneath him. Pipes and rebar. I think it must have gone clean through. The sensation of cold was like when you inhale through a gap in your teeth. Air where air shouldn't be. He didn't dare move, trying desperately to grip the metal and stop the blood, but his head remained motionless, and through his tear-blurred eyes I could see the other workers returning, each looking around in confusion and giving a shrug. None of them noticed us. Not even when one of them, a slumped man with a once broken nose, looked directly at us. My conductor gurgled and waved and went entirely unnoticed. They didn't want to see us. Presumably something terrible would have happened if they had.
when he couldn't keep his eyes open any longer and couldn't keep his hands to his neck, his struggling ceased. But he could still hear them, of course. Once they'd given up the search, someone took charge, his voice ringing out above the others. "All right, lads," he said. "Let's fill it in." "I'll spare you the rest, Mike. Shouldn't be too hard to fill in the gaps. Reckon I'll just sit here a while. Not like I'll be able to get back to sleep now. I can't bring myself to walk in all the nothing underneath me. Hang on. That's weird. I didn't even clock it at first, but I don't normally see things this soon after waking up. I wonder what that means. Maybe it doesn't mean anything. Tell you what, though, it's all made me think about these recordings a little differently. That man died anonymously while the world continued around him. The end of his existence was completely ignored. Obviously, that exact scenario is more than a little improbable. It makes you think, doesn't it? If nothing else, there's evidence that I was here. Maybe it's too much to hope that means someone will notice my death, but, well, nobody deserves to go like that. It should be noticed, recorded. There should be someone who remembers it happening. If your death has no impact on those around you, then what was your life worth? Maybe one's final moments shouldn't define a life, but I think they're important. I think someone should know how it happened and what you did. Why bother going down fighting if there's nobody to see it? It's not as though it'll matter to you for very long. It's all academic, of course, but something to think about.
Their Final Moments is written and produced by Joe MacDonald, the voice of Avery, with production assistance by Paul MacDonald. Official art for the series is created by Sara Brzezinska, and all the music is composed by Simon Davies. You can find links to more of Sara's work in the episode notes. Special thanks to Kane Mansfield for quality assurance on the whole series. Come back 2 weeks from now to hear the pros and cons of paranoia, according to Avery, and why he can't sit still in churches in The Walls Have Eyes.